Regulars, howdy. Let's call this Regulars Dispatch number one and just fly into it. I'm going to first read a selection from Willie Nelson, An Epic Life, a biography written by Joe Nick Petoskey, one of the best storytellers you'll ever be around. We're going to pick this up in, I believe, 1972 in our fair city of Austin. And here we go. A few days later, Willie and Paul, that'd be, by the way, Willie Nelson and Paul English, went to the Armadillo World headquarters, the place where the band had dropped off the hippie chick from Kerrville, looking for Eddie Wilson. A gregarious ex-Marine and ex-beer lobbyist, Eddie was the Armadillo's head honcho, the closest thing to a leader of the stridently leaderless collective. The Armadillo technically functioned as a business, but those who worked there sure weren't in it for the money. They were in it for the music, the beer, the dope, the camaraderie, and whatever else the countercultural movement symbolized. 2 years earlier, Eddie had crossed over from beer-drinking Yahoo to manager of Shiva's Headband, a homegrown hippie band that had a contract with Capitol Records. Shiva's performed psychedelic music driven by electric fiddle and guitar and was prone to play 20-minute versions of every song. After the Vulcan closed, they needed a new place to play. Eddie Wilson found the Armadillo for them and rounded up some friends to help open the place in August of 1970. Unlike most of his Armadillo brethren, Eddie was hip to Willie Nelson. He had gone on a dope run to San Francisco, to where many Austin hippies migrated, trying to make contact with the Grateful Dead and move a few pounds of Mexican weed in order to help pay the Armadillo's rent. He was staying with a homesick Texan who was playing over and over Willie's live country music concert album recorded at Panther Hall in Fort Worth. When the friend mentioned Willie had moved from Nashville to Austin, Eddie was determined to find him. A week after his return, Wilson was standing in the cabaret in the back of the club when he turned around, saw Willie and Paul in front of him. "I've been looking for you," Eddie said to Willie, introducing himself. "You just found me," Willie said, grinning. "I want you to play here. I want to play here." A handshake sealed the deal. Willie had met some unusual folks in the nightclub business. This group might have been the most unusual of all. They made him feel right at home. Several customers at other tables left their pitchers of beer to come and say hello. As Willie and Paul graciously accepted the welcomes, Eddie Wilson noticed a trait he hadn't seen in other music people who played the Dillo. As long as someone was speaking to him, Willie didn't break eye contact. Quote, "It's a quality I'd seen in only two other people, Ann Richards when talking to children, and Muhammad Ali when he's talking to girls," Eddie said. A date and terms were agreed upon. Willie would get half the door, no guarantee. It was the same deal the Armadillo worked with Dallas blues man Freddie King, and he was packing 1,500 hippie fans into the building every few months while he continued to work the chicken shack circuit in the rest of Texas. Michael Priest, one of the Armadillo's in-house poster artists, whipped up a poster depicting an old cowboy crying into his mug of beer with a jukebox playing Hello Balls in the background and a small picture of Willie hanging on the wall up in the corner. The Armadillo had booked some weird stuff in its 2 years of existence. Willie Nelson might be the weirdest booking yet. Eddie Wilson hedged his bet by asking Greasy Wheels to open for Willie and accept a $100 fee, even though the band had played to a full house as headliners a few weeks before. After some debate over whether the regular crowd would pay a higher price, Eddie and Bobby Hederman set the cover charge at the increased price of $2. Willie helped promote the booking a few nights before by dropping by Mother Earth, the Rock and Roll Club on North Lamar at 9th Street, where Michael Murphy, Austin's cosmic cowboy, was holding forth. On the evening of August 12, 1972, the day the last U.S. troops departed Vietnam, Willie Nelson took the stage of the Armadillo World Headquarters in front of 450 paying customers. Although the air temperature outside had peaked at 96 degrees a few hours earlier, the Dillo felt hotter than Laredo since it lacked air conditioning. At least half the crowd had come for Greasy Wheels, but there were at least 100 hardcore Willie Nelson fans who'd never stepped inside the big building with its murals of strange characters like Big Ricky, the Guacamole Queen, Shiva's Headband, and Freddie King playing guitar while an armadillo popped out of his heart. Pantsuits mixed with bell-bottoms, beehive hairdos contrasted with long and stringy-haired don'ts. Beer flowed from the taps. A cloud of smoke hung under the ceiling. Backstage, Willie posed calmly for photographer Burton Wilson, who was archiving the musicians and staff of the Armadillo before Willie took the stage with Bee and Paul. He was 39 years old. He'd been a scrapper for 10 years, a Nashville recording star for 10 years after that, and he still felt like he was getting his first wind. He was clean-shaven, and his hair barely covered his ears, but as he scanned the audience, making eye contact, the expression on his face telegraphed to the crowd that he might look like an old redneck shit-kicker, but deep inside he was one of them. Baseman B. Spears stood to one side. "Willie passed me off as an Indian," B. said. "I had a headband and moccasins if we were going into a place where we knew we'd get some shit. I wasn't making a fucking statement. I'm a redneck, too." Paul English, Willie's man in black, sat on a drum stool, on a riser, behind them, sticks in hand, black cape with red lining draped over his shoulders. Willie rolled out the medley of hits, like he did at Woolridge Park. "Crazy," "Hello Walls," "Funny How Time Slips Away," and "Nightlife." Applause greeted recognition of each song. Sticking to the Bob Wills formula of presentation, he played one song after another without pause, keeping the songs short and sweet, save for a couple of solos to show the audience he could play some serious guitar. Paul, who was now up to 7 capes in his wardrobe, was in ecstasy. He drummed so hard that at one point he fell back off the stool. "The cape I was wearing was velvet, and it was around my throat, and I got up and all of a sudden fell back because it was choking me to death," he explained. "I was sweating profusely and didn't have much oxygen. I just went down." After the show, the band, fans, family, and friends retreated across Town Lake to the Crest Hotel, where writers Edwin Budd Schrake and Gary Japp Cartwright had rented a suite. A guitar pulling ensued, starring Willie Hugh Nelson with UT football coach Daryl K. Royal as producer. Even though he'd rented the suite, Cartwright was threatened with expulsion by coach when he continued talking while Willie played. "Leave or listen," Royal ordered curtly. Japp shut up and stayed, paying attention to Willie and his songs. "I don't remember having to quiet Bud Schrake," coach said. He was an educated listener. Gary was not as informed as Bud. Willie might have taken a leap of faith by abandoning the Nashville establishment for the fringes of a counterculture in the making. But on that hot night in August, he knew it was the right call. That's awesome. I guess I'm reading that. I think it's cool that Jocko Willink reads before his podcast. Not that I listen to all of them or every single one, because he records so many and they're long. But it's awesome the way he opens. If you haven't ever checked it out, give it a shot. And Threadgills and Eddie are, of course, on our minds these days. Eddie's one of the regulars. He's a friend of ours. He's hung out with us a bunch. And he's on our minds a lot. They've had to announce with the shutdown here, it's something like 36, 37 days since Mayor Adler issued his shelter-in-place order, as we're all hunkered down because of this damn virus. But Threadgills on North Lamar, the remaining Threadgills, will never reopen. It's closed. So for now, as far as we know, Threadgills is no more. The Riverside location was lost, I don't know, a year ago. And now we've lost North Lamar, too. And the North Lamar location, which Eddie calls Old Number 1, goes back to Kenneth Threadgill himself. By lore, and I think in point of fact, the first liquor license issued in Travis County after Prohibition, the place where Janis Joplin would first play live, and all that history. So it's a real bummer. That's a real gut punch for all of us. And Austin lore and history. I had planned. It's crazy to think about, but our fourth Regulars Day Off was coming up. It was going to be this Saturday. Regulars Day Off, the regulars, a crew that's been gathering at Mozart's every Friday morning for 10 or 12 years, somewhere in there. we pick a day in May for the last 4 years, and we go run around all over Central Texas like Ferris and Cameron and Sloan in the movie and see what we can make of it. They, you know, go to the Art Museum and Wrigley and Sears Tower and a nice restaurant. We've gone all over the place. And we were going to meet in the back of Threadgill's on North Lamar. There's a two-story building there. Some kitchen downstairs. Upstairs is more or less a museum. It is a museum right now. It's where the South Austin Museum of Popular Culture moved up and became the Austin Museum of Popular Culture because it wasn't in South Austin anymore. And two people that used to work at the Armadillo back in the day were displaying their collections of amazing poster art and t-shirts and artifacts of all kinds. And Eddie's had amazing collections of all kinds in there for years. We were going to hang out there. My friend Matt was going to show a movie that he made about Barbara Conrad Smith, and that's an amazing story unto itself, which I'll get into later. But we were going to get to watch that movie in there. Maybe some of the footage Matt shot when Threadgill's on Riverside closed, hang out. And Eddie was going to bring a lot of his writer buddies to have lunch with us. It was going to be really awesome. And now we can't do that for two reasons. We can't do anything like that right now anywhere because of this shutdown. And Threadgill's is no more. They're not going to serve food anymore. So that's a tough one. Did want to, though, recognize Willie today. It's his birthday. He's 87. And born in Abbott, Texas. I believe Abbott is somewhere just north of Waco. I think it's on I-35. Must have driven through it or past it a couple thousand times in my life. Never, I don't think I've ever been there. And I think it's got a few hundred people in it today. I don't know what it's like in 1933. On one of the regular stay off things, we went down to San Marcos. And we went down there because at Texas State, they have this amazing resource known as the Whitliff Collections. Bill Whitliff started it. We lost Bill in the last year, I believe. Incredible screenwriter, writer, ran a press publishing works by Texas writers and writers of the Southwest, major photographer and artist and all kinds of stuff. So he starts the Whitliff Collections there at Texas State. Cormac McCarthy's donated all of his papers. I think John Graves. When we were there that day for the regular day off, they had an exhibit going of a whole bunch of artifacts from Jerry Jeff Walker. That was really cool. And on permanent display, they have a songbook. It's written or created by hand. The cover looks like it's some sort of piece of leather, maybe, and with holes punched in the sides and little, a little bit of rope, or I can't remember, a piece of leather, a leather strap holding it together, and written by hand and then either painted or with marker on the front. It says Songbook of Willie Nelson. And apparently, he made this when he was 11 or 12 years old, and that's pretty amazing to contemplate. And it's awesome to picture those guys coming together, Willie Nelson and Eddie Wilson, at the Armadillo World Headquarters here in Austin. So that's pretty great. I'm going to try to keep at these little dispatches, sharing just little stuff, just talking with y'all. If it stays within just the confines of the regulars who reconvene weekly at Mozart's most of the time on Zoom these days, that's totally fine. I also was doing some interviews a few years ago with Amplifier clients and people related to Amplifier type ideas. It was called Capital. I was doing it on Dan Benjamin's 5x5 network. And I really enjoyed interviews and have done a few recently. So I want to do a whole bunch more. Austin musicians and CPG companies and entrepreneurs and artists and all kinds of folks. And a lot of people, a lot of friends and people too outside of Austin. It's not just about Austin. So I'll be doing those, trying to get up, just getting started now, just kicking the tires with this myself. I'm sure it sounds really crappy. Thanks for listening if you've made it this far. I'm just I don't have a studio. I'm on a pretty decent mic, but I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm in a writer's room office in our house, So if there's background audio, it's our daughter running around or watching a cartoon or the dog or who knows what, or just all kinds of who knows what technical problems that I'm inserting into this. But I'm not going to wait until I know how to do it. I'm just going to start doing it. But I want to do some of these daily dispatches. I want to do some of these dispatches. We'll see what kind of frequency I can achieve. But share some of the stuff that's bubbling up through the regulars and otherwise, and expand that circle, I think, and do some interviews. I'm going to host it on Fireside FM, Fireside.fm, which is another project of Dan Benjamin. So thank you, Dan and Hattie, for that help. And we'll go from there. I think I'm going to cut it short, or at least cut it off now for today, and maybe try it again tomorrow. Share some stories, more stories about Eddie, Willie, Austin, but also all kinds of stuff, just entrepreneurship around the regulars. We talk about the web all the time, all kinds of fascinating people doing some really, really kick-ass stuff. And what I would say that I like about the regulars is there's no agenda or purpose. It's just people show up. We try to help each other. But the way that manifests a lot is we try to get each other to take action, and figure out what skills each person needs to learn next and what networks, we're a network ourselves, I guess, but what other networks they need to plug into and seeing if we can help make that happen to get their thing, whatever it might be, an art project or a prank or a stunt or a company, to start, to go from zero to one, as they say, and be a thing and then get better. And we do a lot of that. And so, hopefully some of that will come through this exercise as well. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon. Be good.